Today on KPR Presents, we're looking back at the 2018 Kansas elections with political insiders, campaign strategists, and journalists. It's the Dole Institute of Politics post-election conference held November 28, 2018. For the first part of this hour, we focused on the Kansas gubernatorial race. For the rest of the hour, a look at the races for Congress in the Kansas 2nd and 3rd districts. This event was moderated by Dole Institute Director Bill Lacey, who asked campaign manager Pat Leopold how Steve Watkins went about mending fences after a bruising Republican primary.
Without a doubt, that was basically job one when I arrived, was reaching out to the party establishment. I mean, the reality was during the primary, he was one of seven or eight people running. He was the only true outsider. There were state senators, the state rep. Everyone was much more well known by the party establishment than him. So when you're talking about the county party leaders, the county chair, vice chair, those kind of officers, they all knew all the other people, and they kind of picked amongst those the people that they knew. So, but Steve was able to win on an outsider message. This 2018, the outsider message had great appeal. He was the only one that could carry that banner, and he ran with it. And he was able to win a tight primary election thanks to that. So the first job was to reach back out to those, the party leaders, and they just really needed to get to know him. Because they sent out, there were like 50 of them signed a letter that Davis used very effectively during the general election, talking about how they don't support him, how they did not support Steve Watkins. That really wasn't exactly what the letter said, but they had a lot of questions about him. And it's largely, again, just because they didn't know him. Some of it was some misinformation that had been flying out there. So we just set up roundtables. This isn't rocket science. It's not overly complicated stuff. It's just set up roundtables, private invites. We're inviting all these GOP elected officials throughout the district, Southeast Kansas, Northeast Kansas, in Topeka. We did one in Topeka. We did them throughout. And it's basically, he gave his little spiel. He talked about who he was. He talked about his bio. He talked about his values, his beliefs, and then just opened the floor, and they asked questions. And asked questions they did. And they had a lot of them, and they were tough, shockingly tough at times. But he answered them, and I think he got a lot of respect from people from that. So within a week, 2 weeks after the primary, virtually all those people who had signed that letter were already on board. So it was not a process, I should note, that I was unfamiliar with. I ran Lynn Jenkins' campaign in 2008 when she knocked off Jim Ryan, who was trying to make a comeback. Dealt with a lot of the same issues. He was the much more of a known quantity. Now, admittedly, Lynn Jenkins was the state treasurer, so she was much more well known than Steve Watkins, who was walking into this with no political experience. But even so, at that level, those people almost exclusively backed Jim Ryan. So we went through a very similar process. This was a process I was familiar with. But then after that, we needed to reach out to appeal to what I would call traditional Republicans, affectionately known as the Bob Dole or Lynn Jenkins Republicans, and get them on board because they were skeptical of him. And that was a little more complicated because that's like a group as opposed, it's a collection of people that you can't sit down and meet with. That's more about actually winning the election. The first part was just about winning over individual party officials and getting them on board.
Okay, Kerry, let's take a few minutes to get your interpretation of the Davis campaign path to victory.
Sure.
And what worked out and what didn't work out?
Sure. Yeah, so our path to victory, we kind of was two-pronged.
Kerry Gooch was campaign manager for Democratic candidate Paul Davis in the 2nd District.
One, it was compete everywhere, right? We know in the 2nd District there are 25 counties. There are a couple really big ones, but when you get down to it, there are 25 counties. And to win this race, we couldn't get killed everywhere. We seriously took that into strong consideration. We took that so seriously that one of the things I did with every member of my staff, in order to get hired, you had to know all 25 counties in the district and be able to put them on a map. It was serious for us to not only say that we were going to compete everywhere, but actually go out and do it. That was one of the reasons why Paul kicked off his campaign with a listening tour, going to all 25. Right, we wanted to show from day one that, you know, Paul was going to go and compete in some of these counties and towns that Democrats don't always or usually compete into, especially in this race. The other thing was that we knew that this was going to be a turnout race, right? We kept hearing nationally about how much this blue wave was happening, but we did know that that wasn't something that was just going to happen. We had to almost make that happen. So we had to do things. We had to be places. We had to go places and do things to do everything that we could do to kind of boost the turnout on for our Democratic base as much as we could. And we had to do that all without making any mistakes. At the end of the day, this Kansas 2nd District is a very Republican district, right? So we had a very, very small margin of error if we were going to win the race. What I think that worked out well for us, we did go everywhere. We did compete everywhere. We hit our goals in a lot of these smaller counties that we didn't even think that we were going to get close to. And we did have a great turnout, but you know, at the end of the day, I think that we came really close, but just weren't able to get all the way over the edge.
Okay, very good. We're going to lump the two campaigns together just a little bit because they have the same kind of environmental issues and everything. So Dan McNamara, I'm going to ask you to describe when you came into the campaign what you felt that Congresswoman-elect David's path to victory was.
Yeah, so I started in the campaign. So I think the problem with the David's campaign was time. Charisse announced her candidacy on Valentine's Day 2018, which is very late to announce a candidacy, but there was a change in the primary field. So resources and time were always the thing we were fighting on the campaign over and over again. In the primary, my path to victory was actually to win Wyandotte County and let everybody else fight over the rest, and that didn't happen. In fact, in the primary, we killed it in Johnson County and did not do as well as I thought we would in WICO. Part of our decision to rely heavily on TV in the primary was we didn't know what the electorate was going to look like and what turnout was going to look like in that particular election. So we needed to raise every dollar we could and go up on TV, because the one thing we did know was Charisse's late entrance into the race didn't hurt her. None of our primary opponents had higher name recognition than her, and we knew that people liked her story. The idea of being raised by a single mom, going to Johnson County Community College to the Ivy League, and then working for President Obama and wanting to come back here to Kansas to make sure everybody had the same access to opportunity and education and healthcare that she had. So once we figured out that we won the primary at 7:30 a.m. while Charisse was on the way to the hospital because one of our staff members had a baby. We called her and she found out in the car with her mom. We had to quickly move to the general. And so what we found was the message that I just said, her going to JUCO, to an Ivy League school, and then working for President Obama was a great message for the general as well. So there was only really a week that we weren't on TV from July going forward to the campaign. I remember writing budgets in the general and being like, oh my God, how are we gonna raise this money? It was so hard to raise $500,000. And very fast money came in a way where I think we caught, CJ probably can speak to this, I think we caught y'all off guard. I was caught off guard by how much money we were raising. And the one thing we knew is that Mr. Yoder couldn't define us. We were an unknown quantity to the electorate. She had never ran for office before, and we needed to make sure that everyone knew that Charisse Davids was raised by a single mother, went to Johnson County Community College, went to an Ivy League law school, and then worked for President Obama, and that she wanted everyone to have the same access to education, which we did over and over and over again. The other thing that was interesting about working for Charisse is she's such an interesting person. Everyone that talks to her and meets to her loves her. She has, like, she's an MMA fighter, LGBT community, Native American, and it was literally part of our job was to figure out which parts of her story do people relate to most, and you guys saw what we did.
Okay. Well, I've got to say, it's obvious where the message discipline, that's what you call that when you talk about coming back and forth, comes from, and that's very, very impressive. Let me, Dan, if I may ask you a follow-up question related to from a retrospective point, from now looking backwards. Mm-hmm. How big of a plus was it for you to be challenged in a primary by an individual who received Senator Sanders' endorsement, the more progressive endorsement? How valuable to
as
you?
As a person who's personally very progressive, I was pissed. but it was helpful. The whole primary experience, so It was helpful under the fact that we raised a lot of money and he raised a lot of money. It raised the profile of the race. And it made us work harder. It made everybody working for Charisse because they were trying to say we were corporate. And Charisse's car has all of the lights on them and she has to like get it fixed. And we're like, she is not corporate. It made everybody on the campaign work 10 times harder. But the primary as a whole made us better. It made us more disciplined. And it doesn't hurt when you're on TV for a month in a primary and you don't stop TV in any real way from July all the way to the till November.
Okay. CJ, what was Congressman Yoder's path to victory in this election?
Yeah, well, kind of talking a little bit more tactically, so our objective basically was to combine two groups of people in the 3rd District that happened to be diametrically opposed to each other, form those into a coalition that would make up a majority and give us a victory. It made basically 43% to 45% of the district who loves President Trump, tends to be conservative Republicans, and then about 8% to 10% or 12% of the district, which is sort of your moderate kind of Melissa Rooker, Barbara Bollier type Republican who very much opposes President Trump. And we could not win, and obviously we did not win, without both of those coalitions, and the moderate Republican coalition just never came home for us. But the goal from the outset was to both hold the base and to win over. Kevin had won those moderate Republicans handily in the past. I mean, he's significantly outperformed other up and down ballot Republicans in Johnson County in the 3rd District in past elections. As we saw with a lot of these House races across the country, we just couldn't break it away from the national discussion. And I kind of have taken it to calling this the Steve Rose problem, and I've got a quote here from his column. It says, "I've come to the painful decision that I cannot vote for Kevin Yoder for a 5th term representing Kansas' 3rd Congressional District. I have always voted for him in the past, but casting a ballot for Yoder in the November 6th election would feel like I am aiding and abetting President Donald Trump." And that's that 8 to 12% of the electorate really just felt like Steve Rose. And no matter what message we delivered to them, no matter how many hands that Kevin went out and shook and how many parades we walked in and how evidently we tried to localize the race and emphasize Kevin's local ties and his career in public service. You know, he's been an elected official in Johnson County for 16 years. Devoted his entire life, really, his entire adult life to serving the community. And at the end of the day, it was a national race. And that's not uncommon. I mean, you have historically, presidents lose an average of 25 seats in their first midterms. And when their approval rating is below 50, they lose an average of 37 seats. And so that's obviously President Trump has been pretty consistently below 50% approval rating. And you saw him lose, I don't know what the exact, Patrick may know the exact count 40, now, but it's 40. Yeah.
California 21 is going to flip.
Yeah, so yeah. At the end of the day, it just became a national race, and we couldn't break it away. So did not have a path to victory, to answer your question.
What thoughts do some of the rest of you have? What thoughts do some of the rest of you have going about what you thought about these two House races going into the general election? Not today, not looking backwards, but what did some of the rest of you think about how these races looked?
The thing you could feel, kind of the feel of the 3rd District was set by, I think, early October.
John Hanna with the Associated Press.
And there was a sense that it didn't matter what Yoder said, and even if there had been 18 debates, that it didn't matter what issues he raised. It was a strange, because by all odds, and this is what was so unusual about this year, a candidate with the profile that Charisse Davids had, not only would she not have been considered anywhere close to likely to win even 2 years ago, I mean, she wouldn't have even been in the mix of candidates. And that to me is supremely interesting. The second district, what's interesting is you're getting a lot of discussion, and you've gotten this in the gubernatorial race too, of what did Davis do wrong? Was he too cautious? Should he have mentioned Pelosi at the outset, albeit as so he's not a vote for Pelosi, but always with Republicans, just saying the name reminds them that Pelosi is out there. All of those things. And I'm struck by what Stephen Ambrose said, which is, no, he lost a close election, and the numbers we're seeing now suggest it might have been within a percentage point. And so it was just a close election. The Republican was relatively unknown. The Democrat, very well known in a Republican-leaning district. That, to me, turned out, the second district turned out to be a little more interesting race because of the work that Watkins had to do to win over his fellow Republicans.
I think if we look at districts nationally like this, put Kansas in context, right?
Again, Dr. Patrick Miller from KU's Department of Political Science.
So the Republicans went in defending, what, about 24 seats that Clinton held. And in practice, that was a death sentence for those Republicans. They were just wiped out in those seats. They hold three Clinton districts that they won barely. Most of them went to recounts. So in that sense, yeah, I mean, there probably wasn't that much Yoder could have done, realistically, to win the election. And that went beyond Yoder. I mean, you look at districts like the third that had been quite safe for Republicans for some time, they flip over to a Democrat. Those losses for Republicans extended down ballot to state legislature, city council, school boards. And I think that kind of category of district fits into the kind of suburban trend we're seeing that really is the underappreciated counterpoint to the Rust Belt flipping to Trump. I mean, we don't pay as much attention to districts in the, but counties, large suburban, wealthier, educated counties that actually Clinton picked up and Romney had won, or a district like, a county like Johnson County that goes from an 18-point Romney win to a 2.5-point Trump win. So I think there was just a very interesting category of seats out there like that 20 years ago would have been bedrock Republican suburbia, but because of how whites are realigning along education lines, they are the new swing territory. Whereas the second, you know, this is a district that Trump won by 19, 20 points. It's typically a 60-40 Republican district. To Paul Davis's credit, he made it competitive. But this is not a category of district that Democrats did very well in. Democrats did well at picking up districts that Trump won by less than 10 points. They only picked up like two or three Trump double-digit districts. So this was just a very hard category of seat, to put this in context. But, you know, I also think, coming back to some of these candidates in terms of over and underestimating, you know, I think sometimes candidates get overestimated. I think we might have overestimated Paul Davis's ability to overcome the Republicanness of the district, overestimated Yoder's ability to survive in this kind of environment, but also conversely underestimated, you know, Sharice Davids and Watkins. You know, I'm not sure this ever got published, but there was a comment that a reporter told me from a Republican political consultant in Johnson County that Sharice Davids was, pardon my language, a Democrat's because she checked off every single demographic box that should make a liberal go crazy. But that's really insulting. I mean, and that reduces her or any kind of candidate where you just put them in that box and you don't really recognize the strengths that they bring to that race. Like clearly Watkins and Davids did. They were able to generate some enthusiasm. You know, they clearly had a compelling story for some people. And they brought a lot more to the race than just party and what box you want to put them in. So I think that's something that we don't appreciate enough about those two races.
That's Patrick Miller, Assistant Professor of Political Science at the University of Kansas. Dr. Miller was part of the Dole Institute of Politics post-election conference held November 28, 2018. This event also featured Dan McNamara, campaign manager for Sharice Davids, C.J. Grover, campaign manager for Kevin Yoder, Paul Leopold, campaign manager for Steve Watkins, Kerry Gooch, campaign manager for Paul Davis, John Hanna with the Associated Press, Hunter Woodall with the Kansas City Star, Caroline Sweeney with KCTV5 in Kansas City, Jordana Ziegler, campaign manager for Governor-elect Laura Kelly, and Jared Soon with the Singularis Group, a consulting firm that works on Republican campaigns and was previously associated with Kris Kobach's campaign for governor. The Dole Institute invited representatives of Kris Kobach's and Greg Orman's gubernatorial campaigns to participate, but both declined to do so. The Kansas Post-Election Conference was moderated by Bill Lacey, director of the Dole Institute. Special thanks to Mark Crabtree for audio of this event. I'm Kay McIntyre. KPR Presents is a production of Kansas Public Radio at the University of Kansas.